Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today is International Human Rights Day.
Genocide does not happen overnight or without warning. It is preceded by a buildup of human rights violations, bigotry, hatred, and division that culminates in bloodshed and tragedy.
We'll have reaction to Chucky Taylor's interview here on this program about his conviction for torture in Liberia. The opposition Chadema party reacts to Tanzania's 60th independence anniversary. And a Uganda military court sentences two soldiers for killing protesters.
If there are any family members here of the deceased family, please contact us so that we start the process of compensating the family of the deceased.
And dozens of war crimes warrants are being ignored in the Central African Republic. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. International Human Rights Day, and the United Nations says the crime of genocide has not been relegated to the history books, but remains a threat today. The UN calls for an end to the squash as it marks the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of the Victims of the Crime of Genocide and of its Prevention. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This video presents a montage of scenes of violence and devastation in Rwanda, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Iraq, countries that have experienced the horrors of genocide. It also contains scenes of reconciliation and the voices of young people calling for a peaceful and inclusive world. The video set the tone for the United Nations observance of this solemn day of remembrance. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told a virtual global audience that history tends to repeat itself. He urged people to remain vigilant and to understand the early warning signs of genocide.
Today, we face the highest number of violent conflicts since 1945. They are lasting longer and are increasingly complex. Impunity is rife, and human rights and the rule of law are regularly ignored. Identity-based hate speech, incitement, and discrimination continue to spread and are increasingly being used for political manipulation and gain.
The UN chief says these are all alarming warning signs that should prompt action. U.S. experts and human rights organizations have produced numerous reports of gross violations, many amounting to war crimes and crimes against humanity in Syria, Yemen, South Sudan, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. Some reports allege genocide being committed in Myanmar, China, and Ethiopia, among other nations. The president of the 76th session of the General Assembly, Abdullah Shahid, said the body has a responsibility to protect populations from genocide, ethnic cleansing, and crimes against humanity.
Genocide does not happen overnight or without warning. It is preceded by a buildup of human rights violations, bigotry, hatred, and division that culminates in bloodshed and tragedy. That is why we must always meet the forces of bigotry and hatred without tolerance and inclusion. That is why we must celebrate diversity.
Genocide is a term used to describe violence against members of a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group with the intent to destroy the entire group. In 1948, 3 years after the end of World War II, when the full extent of the Holocaust was revealed, the United Nations declared genocide to be an international crime. The term was coined in recognition of the massive crimes committed by the Nazis, who killed 6 million European Jews and targeted Roma people and sexual minorities for extermination. The International Day of Commemoration honors the memories of the millions of victims killed in targeted genocides and to press for action to prevent future genocides from occurring. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A former commissioner of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the TRC, says the commission's work did not cover all alleged gross human rights violations during Liberia's 14-year-old civil war. Instead, Master Washington says the TRC work and its recommendations only cover what was reported to the commission and what it investigated. Washington was reacting to claims made earlier this week on this program by Charles MacArthur Emmanuel Chokey Taylor Jr., the son of former Liberian President Charles Taylor. The younger Taylor is serving a 97-year jail sentence in the United States after he was convicted in 2008 for torture and conspiracy to commit torture while he was commander of the anti-terrorist unit, the ATU, between 1999 and 2003. In an interview from the federal prison in Florida, Chokey Taylor said he did not commit torture. Otherwise, his name would have been mentioned in the TRC report. But Commissioner Washington says the TRC recommendations only cover what was reported to the commission and what an investigator. She said this is why the commission recommended continued investigations into alleged economic and war crimes violations that it could not examine.
Actually, I find it very interesting, James, how every time someone wants to validate themselves or exonerate themselves from whatever allegations of gross human rights violations that is pertaining to them, they tend to fall back on their names not being in the TRC report. But then again, when it serves the purpose, they don't like the TRC, they disparage the TRC report, they don't recognize the TRC. So it's just really interesting. What I will say is that people need to understand that the work of the TRC does not represent every single gross violation of human rights that happened in Liberia. The work of the TRC actually, in the final report, actually reflects only what came to the commission and what the commission had information on and what was investigated. So just because his name is Chokey Taylor and just because he was alleged to have committed all these things, if people didn't come to the TRC to give us the kind of information that we needed to be able to investigate any allegations against him, obviously his name would not be in the TRC report, but it doesn't mean that he didn't do anything. This is why the TRC realized that, one, there were a lot of challenges facing the commission. One, the mandate was very short. We had only 3 years to work. We got an extension of an additional 1 year. And within our 1 year, we had to do a lot of statement taking, investigation, public engagement, public hearings, final report writing, diaspora project, and everything. And also, we were trying to be very careful not to just list people in the report without conducting thorough investigation. It would have been unfair.
Chokey Taylor indicated that if at all he committed these allegations, then how come other members of the anti-terrorist unit, the ATU, did not come forward to testify against him as their way of currying favor from the government then?
Well, I don't know whether that is much of a defense to him, though, because don't forget, the description that we got of the ATU is that it was a tight-knit unit with Chokey Taylor as the head. So if Chokey Taylor was the head of the ATU, do you really expect his boys to come to the TRC and actually say what he did? And don't forget, like I said, the war had just happened. These factions and stuff, they still had the chain of command in place. And people were afraid. Even some fighters who were trying to engage the commission were afraid. And people were, you know, preventing people from coming to testify. All sorts of things were happening. So honestly, I'm not surprised that people didn't necessarily come to the TRC to complain Chokey Taylor or even, like he said, former ATU fighters under his command. These were men who were under his command. He was their boss. And so some of them would have been, honestly, they would have been afraid to come and say what he did. They would have been afraid of reprisal, but then also they would have been trying to protect themselves because, hey, if we go to the TRC and say what our boss did, then, you know, other people will call us out. So there were just so many bizarre scenarios that came to play during the work of the TRC. And then also we had to focus on the bigger picture because imagine there were over 400,000 fighters in the Liberian War. For example, according to the United Nations mission in Liberia at the time, UNMIL, at the end of the war, more than 200,000 former fighters were disarmed and demobilized, and about 98,000 of them were reintegrated into the society. So imagine, we didn't have the capacity to interview all these people, to investigate all these people. It never happens. It is not possible that everybody who committed or allegedly committed atrocity would have been filtered to the TRC process. It never happens anywhere like that. Even after Nazi Germany, they were not able to get every single Nazi perpetrator who persecuted, you know, the Jews and other people. So Chokey Taylor and the rest of them cannot use that as a defense because the TRC did not capture every single thing that happened in the country. It was impossible.
Masa, thank you so much. It's nice to talk with you always.
Thank you, James. Thank you very much.
That was Martha Washington, former member of Liberia Truth and Reconciliation Commission. She was speaking with us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. A United States Court of Appeals upheld Chucky Taylor's conviction and 97-year imprisonment in 2010 for committing numerous acts of torture and other atrocities in Liberia. Taylor, a U.S. citizen, was found guilty of burning victims with melted plastic, lit cigarettes, and hot irons. He also was convicted of conspiring with others to commit torture and firearms offenses. He separately pleaded guilty to passport fraud for trying to enter the United States on a fake passport. In a civil lawsuit, a federal judge ordered Taylor to pay more than $22 million to five Liberian torture victims. Dozens of arrest warrants for people suspected of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Central African Republic have gone ignored more than 3 years after the inauguration of the Special Criminal Court, the SCC, in the country. Amnesty International legal advisor in West and Central Africa, Alice Banens, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the reasons behind the delays in justice for victims.
Current authorities and the UN established together a hybrid tribunal, which is called the Special Criminal Court, which is mandated to investigate, prosecute those that are responsible for war crimes, crimes against humanity. And this Special Criminal Court has issued, at the very least, 25 arrest warrants. None of them has been carried out. Only one person has been arrested pursuant to one of those arrest warrants. But this person, who's Hassan Bouba Ali, has been then released a few days later by the authorities with absolutely no authorization from the judges. So in the end, that means that none of the suspects that the Special Criminal Court had identified has been brought to court to this day. The court is hitting serious difficulties to fulfill its mandate because the authorities of the country are not giving the political support and the support to arrest the people that they should be doing.
What do you think some of the reasons are behind this challenge, behind the fact that the courts aren't getting the support they need?
So there's a range of civil issues that the court is facing. One of them is that the court has a mandate that is difficult to fulfill in the context of the Central African Republic. We know that there's still an ongoing conflict. There's quite significant parts of the territory which is difficult to access, where the armed groups still have control, etc. Now, this is not the full picture. And we also see that in some instances, there's also a lack of political will by the actors, the key actors that should be supporting the court. And so that's what happened with the case of Hassan Bouba Ali, where you see that this person is a suspect, is suspected of very serious crimes against the civilian population, including massacres that happened in 2018 in Alindao. And we see, unfortunately, that he's, if I may say so, protected by the authorities.
That was Amnesty International legal advisor in West and Central Africa, Alice Banens. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 10. Rights activists in Uganda are welcoming a military court sentencing of two soldiers who murdered citizens in the days preceding Uganda's 2021 presidential election. The activists say the tougher sentences will help in preventing future violations of human rights. However, they say they would like the military court to also try senior officers who allegedly supervised the killings. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakarinji has more from Kampala.
On Wednesday this week, the court sentenced one military officer to life imprisonment and another 35 years in jail for their involvement in the November 2020 killings of protesters in Kampala. Presiding Judge Kanusamu Mujenyi read the sentences.
LDU Sali Mustafa, you are convicted and found guilty by this court. After lengthy and careful deliberation by this court, and taking into account the period you have been on remand, you are hereby sentenced to 35 years in prison in a government facility.
At least 50 people were killed by both plainclothes and uniformed security personnel during the protests about the arrest of then-presidential candidate and President Yoweri Museveni's main challenger, Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. Mr. Museveni, in address to the nation, said 54 people were killed mostly by what he termed stray bullets. Human rights lawyer and activist Athan Subuga says he was shocked to learn that the court rendered judgment without informing the public. He also says the military court martial should try all soldiers that are allegedly involved in the killings.
We know that the persons that were arraigned and found guilty are persons of the lower rank, and we are sure that there were commanders in the field that watched over or that were meant to supervise the actions of their officers. We have not seen these commanders being brought to account for their actions.
Robert Kochani, the head of the office of the UN High Commission for Human Rights in Uganda, agrees. He says another issue that the court should resolve is compensation for the victims.
They had promised that accountability will be made, and we have been advocating for that. So if there are perpetrators, I would say alleged perpetrators, who are charged as we are speaking, this is a welcome development. And another development we are expecting on what has happened during the electoral process is that the promised compensation for victims is also translated into reality.
Kanomujin said the army is ready to compensate the victims. He also apologized on behalf of the army to the public and the victims' families for the long the court took to deliver justice. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
Tanzania celebrated 60 years of independence from British colonial rule yesterday, Thursday. The Tanzania Citizen newspaper said several African leaders attended the ceremonies in Dar es Salaam, including President Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya, Paul Kagame of Rwanda, Filipe Jacinto Nyusi of Mozambique, and Azali Assoumani of the Comoros. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan said in her pre-Independence Day message that Tanzania has made enormous progress in development and international relations since independence. However, exiled Tanzania opposition leader Tundu Lissu of main party Chadema says while Tanzania's economy has been liberalized, there has been one-party dominance of politics.
Tanzania is a multi-party state by name only. As we speak, as you may know, the leader of the largest opposition party, Honorable Freeman Aikae Limbowe, is in prison now for 4 months, facing bogus charges of terrorism, his fault being only to have called for constitutional reforms, for having advocated a constitutional change peacefully. You also know that his deputy, the national vice chairman of Chadema, myself, I have been in exile in Belgium for 4 years now. And the reason I'm in exile is I survived an assassination attempt in which I was shot multiple times. After I returned last year for the general elections, I had to flee the country again because the same forces that wanted me dead started plotting to get me again. So at 60 years, we still have all the makings of a regime that is intolerant of opposition.
You say that prison authorities rejected food brought to Mr. Mboy by his family. What is the procedure? Are family members allowed to bring food into the prison?
It is allowed for family members to send food to inmates who are in remand prisons, and during weekends to send food to even prisoners. It is a long-standing practice in Tanzania. It is therefore very surprising and very concerning that the prison authorities in Dar es Salaam are denying the family of Chairman Mbowe to send food to him. This is a matter of grave concern.
We understand that President Samia Suluhu Hassan will be meeting with opposition parties sometime this week or perhaps next week. Was Chadema invited, And will you attend?
From what we know, President Samia Suluhu Hassan is not going to be meeting with opposition parties in the way that she promised in Parliament when she took over as president in March. Instead, we understand that the president is going to be opening a meeting that has been called by the Registrar of Political Parties and the police force, in which they are inviting opposition political parties to participate in order to discuss modalities for holding political meetings and political rallies. Now, we have said categorically that we are not going to attend any meeting called by the Registrar of Political Parties and the police force, because there is no legal issue whatsoever regarding the illegal prohibition on opposition political parties to hold mass rallies and demonstrations. Our law has always been very clear. We are allowed to hold meetings and rallies provided we provide the police force with 48 hours notice.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lissu.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bhatti.
That was Tundu Lissu, the exiled leader of Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from Tienen, Belgium. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the CAF Super Cup. The Confederation of African Football has announced that the 2021 CAF Super Cup will be hosted in Doha, Qatar on the 22nd of December 2021. Al-Hakli League of Egypt, winners of the 2020-2021 CAF Champions League, will face Raja Casablanca of Morocco, winners of the 2020-2021 CAF Confederations Cup, in the annual playoff of the CAF Super Cup title. Al-Hakli are the title holders of the CAF Super Cup, having beaten Morocco's RS Berkane 2-0 in Doha on the 28th of May 2021. Meanwhile, the Confederation of African Football on Thursday began a 30-day countdown to the 33rd edition of the African Cup of Nations. This year's editions will be staged in Cameroon, who are hosting the event for the first time since 1972. The competition is expected to begin on the 9th of January 2022. In boxing news, Richard Aptly Kami, Ghanaian professional boxer who held the IBF lightweight title in 2019, will this weekend meet former lightweight champion Vasily Lamachenko from Ukraine in a lightweight bout this weekend in New York. Richard Kami, who previously held multiple regional lightweight titles, including the Ghanaian title in 2011, the ABU title in 2013, and a Commonwealth title from 2014 to 2015, says he's very prepared to meet Lamachenko in what appears to be the biggest fight of his career. In basketball news, the Basketball African League on Thursday announced that the league's second season will tip off on Saturday, March the 5th, 2022, in Dakar, Senegal, and will include stops in Cairo, Egypt, and Kigali, Rwanda. The Basketball African League will once again feature the top 12 club teams from 12 African countries and will expand to a total of 38 games taking place in three cities over 3 months in 2022. The second BAL season will include 15 games at the Dakar Arena in Dakar from March 5th to the 15th, 15 games at the Hassan Mustafa Indoor Sports Complex in Cairo from April 9th to the 19th, and an 8-game playoffs and finals at the Kigali Arena in Kigali from May 21st to 28th, 2022. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, December 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying have a lovely weekend.